just kiss your face and flutter everywhere. Reality is a lovely place, but I wouldn't want to live there. I wouldn't want to live there.
This is Puck Protection, written by Basil and the Blues, and read by Forzandopod. This is an AU where the Pittsburgh Penguins turn into actual penguins, based on the amazing drawings by Ninja Omelet. After a morning spent buried in headache-inducing paperwork, the phone call was almost a relief. "Hey, Mike," Mario said when he answered, glancing at the clock and leaning back in his office chair. The team was probably about to start afternoon practice. "What can I do for you?" There was a long pause, long enough that Mario pulled the phone away from his ear to make sure the call hadn't disconnected. "Hello?" he said again, frowning. "Mike?"
I think you better come down to South Point,"
Mike Johnson said. His voice was very flat.
"Soon. Now."
Mario felt a sudden lurch of dread. What happened? Given the season they'd been having, he'd developed more experience than he wanted with the sharp, unflinching way Johnston delivered bad news. This was something different. Something worse. Johnston sounded strangled, and that was enough. Mario was already on his feet and out of his office, walking fast. He hadn't even reached the front door when he heard a sudden, distant clamor on the other end of the line. Johnston swore.
"Just get down here,"
he said, and the line went dead. Mario called him 5 times on the drive down to South Point, but he got voicemail every time. He tried the assistant coaches next, with no more success. Then Sid. No answer. By the time he finally made it through the doors of the Isoplex, Mario was torn between fear and righteous fury. If someone had been injured or, God forbid, killed, Johnston would have told him to come to the hospital. If some devastating scandal was about to break, Mario could do the most good at home, making calls and cooperating with their media team. And whatever had happened, no matter how bad it was, why the hell couldn't he get a hold of anyone who would actually talk to him about it? The arena seemed deserted. The first person Mario saw was Johnston himself, standing near the bench with no one else in sight. He was talking, but no sooner had Mario gotten within hearing distance than his voice was drowned out by a chorus of loud, indignant squalling that echoed off the high ceiling over the ring. It sounded more animal than human. Mario's fear and righteous fury hadn't vanished, but for the moment, they'd been supplanted by something closer to total bafflement. "Oh, good," Johnston said when he looked up and saw Mario approaching. "I can't convince them that practice is canceled. They won't leave the bench." The bench was very obviously empty. Mario was deciding if he should call 911 straight away, or if it would be better to try and find someone else in the building who could tell him if his head coach had recently suffered a traumatic head injury, when a small, sleek penguin nudged the bench door open and waddled out onto the ice. Mario stared. And blinked. And stared. The penguin stubbornly continued to be a penguin. It slid a few feet across the ice, then popped back up to look at Mario with beady black eyes. "If this is a joke," Mario said, "if you called me out here in the middle of the day for some kind of media prank, I swear to God." A second penguin, taller and bulkier than the first, popped out onto the ice. Then a third. "First line?" Johnston was looking down at the first penguin, as if he actually expected it to respond. And it squawked in what might have been an affirmative way, if penguins could make affirmative noises, which, Mario reminded himself, they couldn't, because they were penguins. The first penguin waddled up to Mario and nudged his thigh very gently. "I think that's Sid," Johnston said, in the toneless voice of a man who had resigned himself to the worst that life could offer. The rest of them listened to him, mostly. Mario was sure he hadn't wanted to know, but the rest of them? The penguin who couldn't possibly be Sidney, because professional hockey players did not spontaneously turn into flightless birds, made a trilling noise, and a veritable stream of penguins spilled out onto the ice from the bench. At the exact same moment, Gary Agnew appeared, his suit rumpled, cradling what looked like a ball of fluffy gray lint. "I found Bo," he announced triumphantly. He was hiding in Gino's shoe in the locker room. The penguin who wasn't Sydney burst into a flurry of movement, flapping his small wings and squawking. "All right, just a minute," Gary said, kneeling down on the ice. The ball of lint resolved itself into a very small penguin chick, and not Sydney immediately began to fuss over it. He was joined by a taller, skinnier penguin, who crowded next to him so that the chick was tucked between them. Mario wasn't going to say it. He wasn't. The entire situation was ridiculous, and he refused to buy into it for even a second. Sydney snuggled into the taller penguin's side. "That one's Gino," Mario said, and rubbed the bridge of his nose. He could feel the stress headache settling in to stay. "And we have a game on Wednesday." In retrospect, he would have preferred the paperwork. Spent the next hour loading a squawking, indignant chorus of penguins onto a bus. "We're taking you back to console. You can practice there, I promise." "Other people need to use this rink, Sid." And fielding calls from an increasingly confused list of spouses and significant others. "Should I just drive him to the arena?" Carolyn Dupuis asked. "We have an old car seat. I think he would fit." She'd taken a picture of a penguin splashing around in a bathtub, presumably at the Dupuis house, and sent it to Sydney's phone, along with the message, "Help," quickly followed by, "I think my husband just turned into a penguin." And then, almost a half an hour later, "He's eating all the tuna in the freezer. What should I do?" Mario had grabbed Sid's phone from the locker room before they left the isoplex, and he'd called Carolyn back as soon as he saw the messages. The ensuing conversation had undoubtedly been the strangest of Mario's life thus far, although it was immediately superseded by a frantic call from Oli, who apparently had Sid's number on speed dial and had managed to unlock his phone with only his beak, only to peep desperately into the speaker. "We'll send someone around to pick you up," Mario said, trying to sound fatherly and reassuring. The peeping softened into something less terrified. By then, it was obvious that the entire team was affected, not just the players who'd been at the isoplex for practice. On the way back to console, Mario worked his way through the depressingly long list of his injured players, checking in with friends and family members and praying that no one had been driving to the grocery store when the transformation struck. By the time Mario had smuggled a small army of penguins into the building, straggling chicks and all, he'd heard back from everyone on the current roster. Everyone was fine, except for the fact that they'd all spontaneously turned into birds. "Small blessings," Mario reminded himself. "Small blessings." The coaches and staff were handling themselves well, all things considered. Jen looked like she'd taken a puck to the stomach by the time Mario finished explaining everything to her. "We play the Flyers on Wednesday," she said blankly. "And Sid has 3 interviews scheduled. But she promised to keep the media away." Johnston, meanwhile, had dumped a bag of pucks on the ice and told the team to figure out how to move them without sticks or opposable thumbs. Gary had been dispatched to the nearest grocery store to buy enough food for 20-odd penguins of mixed size and indeterminate species. "Fish," he was muttering as he left the arena, scrolling frantically on his phone. "Lots of fish. Maybe squid? Does Whole Foods sell squid?" The penguins seemed determined to keep themselves busy. By the time Gary returned, lugging several enormous grocery bags, they were working on line changes. They'd quickly given up on getting over the boards, but one of the penguins, who squawked indignantly every time a puck got too close, so Mario privately suspected either Flower or Grice, had been stationed at the bench door, keeping it propped open by leaning his whole weight against it. Mario's suspicions were confirmed when Catherine finally arrived at the arena, carrying Penguin Tanger. Flower immediately abandoned his door-holding duties to slide across the rink at high speed to meet them. Tanger squirmed down onto the ice, and the two of them tumbled together, making high-pitched noises and nudging each other affectionately. Catherine immediately pulled her phone out and began recording. She seemed surprisingly cheerful for someone whose boyfriend was currently feathered and belly-flopping on the ice. When Mario asked her how she was doing, she said, "Well, it's not the strangest thing that's ever happened to us." Mario opened his mouth to ask, and then thought better of it. And he's probably happier right now than he's been since the concussion. It's been a tough few weeks. They watched, standing side by side, as Tanger was surrounded by a huddle of fluffy defensemen. Within a few minutes, he was scratching plays on the ice with his claws. The smaller penguins watched intently, silent except for a few questioning peeps. To think that last night Mario had been losing sleep over the salary cap. Maybe Catherine had a point. As long as the transformations were only temporary, and Mario was certain that they were, confident for reasons he couldn't possibly articulate, what was the worst that could happen? They would miss a handful of games. Maybe they would miss the playoffs. But the season had been so dizzyingly unlucky, it was hard for him to be too disappointed. As long as they could get to the off-season without losing anyone else to illness or injury, Mario wouldn't complain. Still, canceling their scheduled games would be a nightmare. There were the broadcasts to consider, and commercial revenues, and ticket sales, to say nothing of the mess it would make of the league's schedule. "Oh, look," Catherine pointed at Penguin Gino, who was nudging a puck over to Sid. Sid looked contemplatively down at the proffered gift, poked at it once, and then settled decisively on top of it. Gino puffed his chest out a little, looking pleased. "They're so sweet. I bet you could sell tickets just to watch them slide around on the rink." She was right, Mario realized. And just like that, a plan snapped into place, like a perfect play unfolding on the ice. He needed to start making calls. With any luck, the Flyers wouldn't know what had hit them. Convincing the Flyers GM to go along with the scheme was easy, mostly because by the end of the conversation, he was too busy laughing to raise any serious objections. "Penguins," he said, making only the barest effort to disguise his glee. "Penguins." Bettman was another story. He might have caused trouble, but Mario had almost a decade of dirt on the commissioner that he pointedly never used to his own advantage, and so on the rare occasions that Mario asked for favors, Bettman was inclined to be agreeable. Even with the approval from on high, though, there was one more obstacle standing in their way. And Mario wasn't optimistic. They had to break the news to the fans. "Who's gonna pay good money to watch birds shit on the ice?" Rutherford asked. It was late evening, and they were holding an emergency meeting in one of the conference rooms to sketch out media strategy. Mario was on his fifth cup of coffee, and too tired to think straight. "They don't shit on the ice," Johnston said, affronted. Once he'd recovered from the initial trauma, and Mario had to concede that it would be profoundly unsettling to walk into your team's locker room only to find the floor scattered with empty clothes and a flock of penguins staring up at you unblinking, he'd become one of the team's staunchest defenders. It helped that the penguins were generally agreeable and eager to please. Apart from the occasional squabbles between the younger players, bored because they were too small to do anything but stand imperiously on top of pucks, or line up along the crossbar and peep encouragingly down at Flower in the net, none of them caused any trouble. Look, people in Pittsburgh were still buying tickets in 1983, weren't they? They'll buy tickets now. And March of the Penguins made like $100 million, Jen said. Everyone loves cute penguins. We could put together an entire episode of In the Room with nothing but clips of Gino pushing pucks over to Sid, and I guarantee we'd have 10,000 views before lunch. There's basically no way this can go wrong. Mario thought that March of the Penguins had probably attracted a different demographic than the typical NHL team fanbase, but Jen's easy confidence was reassuring. "Besides," she added, "it's such a stupid story that no one will think we're making it up, Anything less believable, and they would say we did it on purpose. Now we need to organize a press conference and—
Holy shit! One of the guys from the front office yelped. He was staring down at his phone, which he'd been messing with throughout the meeting, while everyone around him studiously pretended not to notice. Holy shit. Sorry, but I think you need to see this. He handed the phone over to Mario, who was sitting closest to him. Mario frowned, but obediently looked down at the small screen, which was showing the St. Louis Blues official Twitter account. The Blues were playing the Canucks tonight, weren't they? Robert Bertuzzo just turned into a penguin, the most recent tweet read. Another one appeared seconds later. It was just a long string of question marks.
Right. Of course.
I think we need to start contacting former players, Mario said, heaving a sigh. He was already wondering if a sixth cup of coffee would really be so bad, in the grand scheme of things. If his heart hadn't given out yet, it wasn't going to. Besides, he was probably going to be a penguin by the end of the week. He had to enjoy the little things while he could. At least that settled the question of the press conference. One of Jen's assistants took a picture of the team, most of them were snoozing in the penalty box, Sid with Beau tucked carefully beside him, and posted it to the team Twitter account. At St. Louis Blues, you're not the only one with a hashtag penguin problem. Give us a call. They did. So did the Ducks, who had a small, fluffy, and profoundly confused Simon Dupre on their hands. By the next morning, the hashtag was trending. The front office released an official statement at noon. Ticket sales went through the roof. For the most part, the reporters asked predictable questions. How did this happen? Any word on how many players have been affected? Can you confirm that this isn't just an elaborate hoax to help you tank for McDavid? Johnston stuck to their pre-planned script throughout the onslaught. His composure only cracked when the guy from the Tribune Review said, "Are you worried that this is going to affect your chances of going into the playoffs? How will the team handle this on the ice?"
Just to reiterate, in case it's not been made clear, Johnston said flatly, "The team is not currently in a position to play a regular game of hockey in the NHL. Our heaviest player weighs 30 pounds, and our lightest is slightly smaller than a puck. We've battled through a lot of adversity this season." Ole, who was sitting on the podium as a visual aid, bobbed his head in agreement. "But this is, frankly, ridiculous. We'll be playing exhibition games for the foreseeable future."
Once the press conference was over, Mario headed down to the locker room to talk to Sid. Or at least talk at Sid, while Sid presumably listened. Only to find the Tribune Review reporter standing outside the locker room door, crowded into the wall by at least a dozen furiously squawking penguins. Downey was pecking at him. Gino was throwing himself bodily at the reporter's legs in a flurry of feathers and rage. "Help!" the man begged, and Mario very carefully waded in to rescue him. "I'll handle it," he said, looking down. The players shuffled away reluctantly, Downey aiming one last peck at the reporter's kneecap. None of them went very far, except for Gino, who vanished back into the locker room.
"I swear, I didn't mean to," the reporter said, before Mario had a chance to ask what was going on. "I tripped, okay? I spend a lot of time here, and usually there aren't flocks of penguins roaming the halls."
There was one player, Mario realized with a sinking feeling, that he hadn't seen in the crowd attacking the reporter. "Please tell me," he said, terrifyingly gentle, "that you didn't step on Sidney Crosby."
The reporter quailed. It was more like a kick. I definitely didn't step on him. It just..."
Mario had never more seriously contemplated murder. Fortunately for the reporter, his first priority was checking on Sid, who was hiding in a corner of the locker room with Gino hovering protectively over him. Mario knelt down beside them. "I'll call a doctor," he said, reaching out gently. "Or a vet. Someone. Anything broken?" Sid made a small noise and shook his head. "We'll get you checked out anyway, just in case."
"God, Sid, you'll give me a heart attack yet. We should get you a kid's helmet and a set of pads."
Sid looked up with clear interest. Gino nudged Mario enthusiastically.
"Right," Mario said slowly. "You want gear? Before the Flyers get here tomorrow?" Another nudge. "Well, that was clear enough. It might seem a little strange, a penguin sliding around the ice wearing a helmet, but if it helped keep Sid safe. Besides, it would look cute, and was therefore good for ticket sales. Jen would be proud."
You and I left our troubles far behind.
I still have just one more question on my mind. For all my pals who live in the oceans and the